And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes, and it's great to have you on board. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got 3 hours of the latest news, features and interviews as well, of course. As we've been mentioning, it's Love Donegal Day. We're going to be out and about to one of the jewels in our crown, just to get a sense of what's a platform, how beautiful our beautiful county is, I suppose, as well. Well, anyway, that's coming up in the second hour, so stay tuned for that. And we've got so much more besides. We're also going to be speaking to a sleep specialist. So maybe you have a question as it relates to your sleep. And ironically, I come in today, I didn't have a good night's sleep last night. I kept waking up. I had incredibly vivid dreams. But if you have any questions about your sleep, your partner's sleep, your mum and dad's sleep, your children's sleep, anything to do with sleep and the quality of your sleep, please get in touch with us. 086 6020 5000, and we'll get those questions answered for you, I do hope. That and so much more besides. Right, you can watch the show as always if you're at home or work in the home, the Fire Stick or your smart TV. We're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch us there. We're on the X platform as well, and across Facebook, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, and the Highland Hub. And stay tuned also to our socials, because there's digital first content there as well, be it from a events or special days like today, it being Love Donegal Day or whatever. So check out our socials and like and subscribe too if you can. Let's start with a look at the newspapers. The Finn Valley Voice this morning: planning restrictions on cabins and modular homes in back gardens are on the way out, says Junior Housing Minister Mr John Cummings. Submissions on planning permission exemptions for garden cabins were predominantly supportive during the 4-week consultation that drew almost 1,000 submissions in August. The move will be particularly welcome in the Finn Valley, with its long tradition of young couples starting out on mobile homes in their parents' back gardens. Donegal's also well placed to quickly begin building homes of this type, says Ms. Natasha Richardson of Luxury Tiny Homes Bridge End. You can read more on that. I wonder how big the uptake will be. This notion that your step forward is to be living in your parents' back garden. But anyway, I'm not sure how well it will be taken up on, but who's to say? I could be very wrong indeed. Shot across the bow for Martin as Fianna Fáil backbench rebel in vote. This is the Irish Independent. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has been delivered a shot across the bow from Fianna Fáil backbenchers after the vote on the party's presidential nomination was tighter than expected. Former Dublin football manager Jim Gavin was selected to be the candidate with the backing of a majority of TD senators and MEPs. And I'll be honest with you, I thought it might be a little bit tighter. I thought it was a bold move by Martin, and he'll survive it and he'll overcome it, but it sends quite a message on this issue and on his leadership. 29 members of the parliamentary party defied the leadership request and voted for MEP Billy Kelleher. So these are, I don't know who they are, because it was a private vote. I have my suspicions who might have voted for him, but this is a private vote, so we don't know. But these are senior politicians in the Dáil, by the way, just in case you weren't aware. There was further annoyance in Fianna Fáil last night after Mr. Gavin confirmed he was previously approached by Fine Gael to contest the European elections. I respectfully declined that initiative, he said. Or that invitation, he said, in an interview with David McCullough and RTE. I didn't see myself at that time as being a politician serving in Europe. And he's going to have lots of questions now about his experience. He doesn't have a legal background, but of course the role of president, there is quite a legal element to it. He doesn't have a political background. Now, these all could work in his favour, but now is the time where a private citizen all of a sudden comes under a great deal of scrutiny. And we'll see how he manages that. He might do quite well. You might remember that Donald Trump has constantly been trying to distance himself recently from Jeffrey Epstein, who is a convicted and now dead sex trafficker and paedophile. And there was this talk of a letter that was sent to Jeffrey Epstein from Trump, where he had drew the outline of a woman's body, the text, really weird text, implying that they had a shared secret, and then signing this letter. Trump said it didn't happen. The Wall Street Journal said it did, and he's suing them, a multi-billion euro lawsuit. But it now appears that it is true, because a book celebrating one of Epstein's birthdays has been released, and there's lots of people's names in it, lots of pictures, and this very card that Donald Trump sent to Epstein. Now, the White House continues to deny it, but that's always been Donald Trump's way. He'll just call it fake news until such times as it disappears. But Democrats in Washington have published a birthday message that Donald Trump allegedly sent Jeffrey Epstein more than 20 years ago, as the US president faces renewed pressure over his links to the late disgraced financier and convicted sex offender. The release of the note on Monday comes as Mr. Trump has struggled to quash a furore over his past relationships with Epstein, which has engulfed his administration in recent months. Here it is. We got Trump's birthday note to Jeffrey Epstein that the president said doesn't exist, Democrats on the House Oversight Committee wrote, as they posted an image of what they claimed was Mr. Trump's message on X. Whether he's involved with it or not, there's lots of other high-profile people that have sent stuff to him. And the wording of it is so, so weird. It's like there was this secret club that they were in the know on something that was going on. And, you know, we're looking at it through 2025 lenses. But this was 20 years ago. Things were different. They shouldn't have been different, but they were. But there was definitely some sort of an elite club of people who were incredibly abusive. And you can decide for yourself if you believe Donald Trump was or was not one of them. Obviously, Democrats and Republicans will wheel out their handwriting experts to claim the signature is real. Others will say, no, it isn't real, and on it will go. The Daily Mail tells us that thousands of home energy customers face a hike in their bills of over $200 a year after another price increase. Energia yesterday became the third supplier this year to hike its rates, with a 10.9% increase in electricity prices coming on October 9th, adding €205 to the average annual bill. Dual fuel customers face a 6% jump, though I don't think there's too many of them up here, which adds up to almost €4 a week for the average customer, or €203 a year, while gas prices remain unchanged for now. Experts now fear other suppliers will follow suit before the cold winter season, but the government has ruled out energy credits as seen in recent budgets. There may be some good news, and perhaps for the majority of you out there, though, because Electric Ireland, it's the biggest suppliers. And Electric Ireland has come out this morning to say it's to decrease gas prices for 140,000 customers by 4% from the beginning of November, while there'll be no increase for the company's 1.1 million electricity customers ahead of the winter. So if you aren't with, check your prices, right? Don't stick with a company that's going to increase if there's other companies that are cheaper. Shop around, get that £200 into your bank account, not into some massive electricity's bank account. But that's good news if you're an Electric Ireland customer. Our electricity is already too expensive, I acknowledge that. But at least if you are with Electric Ireland, you are not going to see an increase in your electricity prices this year. So it'll be interesting to see what the other companies that have already gone out there and said they are increasing prices. But please shop around. Shop around on this. Shop around on your mobile phones. There's absolutely no reason, unless you buy your phone, your mobile phone through your contract, there's no reason why anyone in this country should be paying more than €15 a month for all calls, all texts and all data. There are a million companies that are doing it. And some are doing it for even less than €15. So unless you buy your phone on your contract, which is crazy in and of itself, because you can get a perfectly good phone that matches. I mean, obviously iPhone users are a different breed. They won't switch to a different phone. But if you're an Android user, there's perfectly good phones as good as your medium flagship phones for €200 or €300, then £15 a month. It's a no-brainer not to go down that route. I know people still paying €40, €50, €60 a month for mobile phone coverage, and that money needs to be in your pocket. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning: Ireland has the third highest rate of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, where children suffer because of parental drinking, in the world, a report has found. The study by RCSI University of Medicine and Health Science found the levels within the Irish populace are up to 10 times the global average. However, it also reveals our health system lacks diagnostic pathways and support services for sufferers. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is a range of adverse conditions, including Learning and concentration difficulties, hyperactivity and emotional management. It can be caused by a father's alcohol consumption prior to conception, as well as that of a mother. But 39% of those surveyed in the report believed that men's drinking habits have no influence. And that's news to me as well, to be honest with you. The HSE estimates between 2.8 and 7.4% of the Irish population lives with fatal alcohol spectrum disorder. Third in the world in terms of rates there. As you would know, plenty of coverage of the vile threats being levelled to Simon Harris and his family. I think an interesting intervention from Gillian Sherratt. This is in the Irish Daily Star. The mother of a young Harvey Morrison Sherratt has spoken out against the unacceptable threats made towards Simon Harris and his family, labelling them disgusting. Gillian Sherratt also shared her hope that these threats were not made in Harvey's name. Harvey died in July at the age of 9 after waiting 7 years for scoliosis surgery. Despite finally undergoing surgery 7 months prior to his death, the severe progression of his spinal curve meant it could no longer be fully corrected. During his tenure as Health Minister, Taoiseach Simon Harris had promised that no child in Ireland would wait more than 4 months for scoliosis treatment. Over the summer, there was a very angry response to that case, but Gillian has come out to say, please do not make these threats in my son's name. Did you watch Stroke Endure the football last night? Arguably one of the worst performances by an Irish soccer team ever. They lost to a team ranked 105 in the world. Already, we're only two games in of a six-game series, and this is for qualification to the World Cup, and we have no chance now. You can frame it as I think we've got Portugal twice next, right? So where will we be at after four games? We took 1 point in our first game, no points yesterday, and the team are not interested in playing for Ireland. They do not want to play for Ireland. And I said yesterday on Facebook, you know, give me a team of League of Ireland players that go out there and bust a gotten lose over, you know, people on multi-million euro contracts in the leagues over in Britain that don't care. They don't want to play. I don't even know why they turned up for the game. And I'm not sure what to make of Hemer Hallgrimsson. He's admitted Ireland need a World Cup miracle. The boys in green suffered the worst competitive loss in their history by losing to 105th ranked Armenia. I feel sorry for the 635 fans that travelled over for that trash. The Icelander previously admitted his side would need maximum points against the group's lowest seeds to qualify, but the boss reckons the American dream is all but over after taking just 1 point from their opening two games. He said, we probably need a miracle to qualify from now. I am a little lost for words. I would say it's the worst performance since I came in tactically. It was brutal. And as I say, you know, change the management. Stick in a manager. Stick in a squad of Irish players, players that play in this country, that play often not just for the money, but actually because they love the shirt, because that was pure trash. If you want to talk about that or anything else, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call if you prefer on 074 91 25000. Now, Israel's military has carried out airstrikes targeting senior Hamas leaders in Doha. We're joined on the programme by an Irish woman living in Doha, Niamh Collins. Niamh, thank you so much for your time today. I greatly appreciate it. How are you keeping?
No problem. I'm good. I didn't sleep great last night, but I'm good.
I can imagine you wouldn't. Yeah. What's the reaction over there? Obviously, it hasn't made the newspapers. It has made some of the newspapers, but we're only sort of getting reaction from the likes of the US president and what have you. The sense being that they didn't okay it. They're not happy with it. But you know what? If it's to get Hamas out of there, it's a means to an end. That's what I'm sort of taking from the American commentary. But what's the conversation like in Doha?
It's total shock, because Doha is the diplomatic center for the Middle East at the moment. They take great pride in their country being safe and secure for people. So between this and the last, last month, we had drones coming in from Iran as well. So, but a Qatari died yesterday, so they will take that very, very seriously. There's a weird feeling here, and like it's like things are going to kick off.
Yeah, because Qatar has been praised for its efforts in trying to, you know, broker peace and to target a building effectively that houses potentially a pathway to peace or a pathway to peace. It seems a bizarre move from the Israelis.
Yeah, it's a very big, bold move, and I think everybody's just kind of waiting to see how Qatar will react, or I don't know about retaliate, but they certainly won't stand for it, especially when someone from their own, if they take that very, very seriously, has died. So also the fact that there was no warning, it was in a public place, a diplomatic area, but it's also a residential place with two kindergarten schools and then a couple of public schools, a time when children were leaving school. So it was taken very, very badly as well.
Yeah, and in some of the commentary afterwards, Israel said it tried its best to limit any impact on civilians, but in saying that, conceded that, you know what, if we kill some Qatari civilians, it's a means to an end almost. You know what I mean? It's bizarre language. They're very very emboldened.
Yes, yeah. So apparently 15 fighter jets were flown in, which is crazy to even get through the airspace, but that's just violence in itself. Like last month when we were being bombed by Iran, to physically see these things coming and dropping, is your brain and your body don't match up for a while when you see it. It's so surreal, so frightening, and it's very unnerving.
And outside of this type of activity, Israel and Iran previously, you know, Qatar is, and Doha is, very peaceful, safe place for you to live in, I understand.
It is stunning, like the culture and the diversity here, everybody respects everybody, it's very peaceful, and it thrives on that's its, you know, like its logo of safety, security. You could leave your wallet or your bag on a table and come back hours later, still there. And so, yeah, it's very, very unusual. And very unusual and shocking that it was Qatar that they came to, because, again, they are hosting negotiations and trying to find a way for peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, so, yeah. And the Middle East is already a tinderbox. You know, I mean, do the population feel nervous that this could be not the beginning, because stuff has happened before, but that we could be on a road to a broader sort of conflict?
Yes, I think so. And I think if Qatar retaliates, I think the other countries will follow. They're quite sick of the whole scenario now themselves. So, but you definitely feel it in the air. You feel an uneasiness. People, you know, your confidence is kind of wrecked. Even in work, we're getting, you know, memos about where to shelter, how to shelter, and if anything happens, to have emergency supplies with you as well. And it's not the norm, especially for a girl from Dunshaughlin in County Meath.
Yeah, well, with that in mind, what does your future hold now? I mean, you know, you have to look after yourself as well. We would hope things will de-escalate rather than escalate. But, I mean, you have to decide, don't you, whether or not you want to live in that environment?
Yeah, well, I worked for a UN agency. It's a humanitarian mission. And that's been struck a blow from the USAID funding and stuff. So we've been kind of suffering the last couple of months. It's been very difficult out here with, you know, changes. And then also experiencing and seeing what's going on and being so close to it. It's a real eye-opener, real education.
What is the conversation amongst people in Doha with what is happening in Palestine? I mean, you're an Irish person, you know exactly what the situation here is, but we look on and it's unbelievable that this is being allowed to happen. And it seems almost surreal, except the fact that, unfortunately, you know, tens of thousands of people are being killed and hundreds of thousands, if not millions, are being starved to death. This, as the crow flies within 100 kilometres of Tel Aviv, which carries on as if nothing is happening. I don't know what the people of Israel believe is happening or if they care, because I don't really know and I'm not judging one way or other, but they're certainly not toppling the government there. But is there a greater sense of the travesty that's happening in Palestine in the likes of Qatar?
Yes, Qatar is very sympathetic towards Palestine. Certainly the people that I know and I work with, everyone is very upset about and frustrated that it doesn't seem to be able to be stopped. So, yeah, it's very sad. It's a hard time for everybody.
Okay, well, listen, look after yourself. I can imagine you just don't know when the next thing is going to happen, and it feels very close when you can stand on a balcony and see the impact of what we're seeing on the news. So stay safe and best of luck with everything you choose to do into the future. Thank you so much. Okay, that is Niamh Collins, an Irish woman living in Doha. She saw firsthand the aftermath of those strikes, and as you can sense in her voice, the mood has changed in Doha, and I think there's a couple of things going on there. USAID is, Donald Trump got rid of USAID for the most part through DOGE, and her work is being wound down anyway, and by the sounds of things, she's looking for a way home. A couple of comments. I think this is off the back. Something I said yesterday, or maybe someone else said it. The government made the flag political. Argon, shush and grow some brains, will you? The bigots deciding to drag our flag through the mud is what made our flag political. No one would have mentioned the flag if that lot left it at home and just had your signs. The Americans might hang their flag outside their house, but they don't fly it on every pole, on every little village that everyone else has to stomach, says another listener. And as I say, I think some of this is off me trying to work through all of this in my own head as well. A caller says, and this is off the back of a chat yesterday, about the potential maybe at some point of having a rail link to Donegal. I'm incredibly pessimistic about it. Sick to death of hearing of fantasy projects from politicians instead of focusing on the basic problems of housing and health and a bridge at the Swilly. Remember past ludicrous ideas, an airport for Letterkenny. I thought that one was all right, actually. A Formula One racetrack at the Big Isle, a ski slope on the hills at Lech. One out of three, I think, actually probably wouldn't be a bad idea. And then they go on to say, oh, the rope bridge walkway across the Owen Carroll Rail Viaduct. The reason why Donegal's rail lines were scrapped was they were financially unfeasible and a dead loss. Okay. I want to say hello to Kathy, who's watching. Kathy Slevin in London. Good morning, Greg. It was lovely to see you and talk to you on Sunday in London. Thank you so very much indeed. Thank you, Kathy. It was lovely to see you too. And thank you so much for your kind donation for the walk we did last week as part of the Donegal Camino. It has been lodged, so to speak. We also had a very generous person called into the studio yesterday with £500 in sterling. Which is bringing our total really close to €5,000. Now, we're going to wrap it up at the end of the week. By the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, the Donegal Camino concluded at the weekend. It's the principal fundraiser and support for Cancer Care West Letterkenny. They have offices on the Pierce Road in Letterkenny to help and counsel people who are going through their cancer journey, and it's a fantastic, wonderful facility, and we back it to try and raise some money, but also to raise the profile and get people out there that maybe are suffering on their own or feel like they're suffering on their own within a family with cancer, to go along and have a chat, have a cup of coffee, and get some good advice, and there's therapies and all manner of things there as well to help people. Last call, sorry to be begging one more time or so. If you have anything to spare that could go towards our fundraiser and we could get our total up over five, I'd really appreciate it, you know. If you give us a call at 07491 25000, we can process it, or we'll you can check out our socials as well. It's linked there. Maybe Shannon might give it just a repost onto our Facebook page, so it's easy to find at the top of the page. But if you've any last few shillings knocking about to help us get over the £5,000 for Cancer Care West Donegal, please give us a call on 07491 25000, or you can go on to our Facebook page. Hey, big congratulations to everyone that's been shortlisted for the Hospitality Awards, or the Customer Service Awards, I beg your pardon. The big final night takes place at the start of October, and the shortlists are out, and it's on our website, by the way. Tens of thousands of you nominated businesses, and I was looking through the list, and I'm delighted to see businesses that I would hold in really high regard are on the shortlist as well. So my feelings are similar to those out there who've been voting. So go now and vote for them if you can. And it helps bump them up. Now, we have a panel of judges as well to offset stuff, to make sure that, you know, well, not to make sure, but to balance things out. You know, you could have a business with a million followers on social media, and you could have another business with 10 followers, right? And they both could have amazing customer services, but it's only fair that there's a balancing out there as well. It's not simply a clicking contest, but your votes are incredibly, incredibly important at the same time, right? So get onto our website, vote early, vote often. Go through the categories, by the way. It's something you can do for the businesses. It doesn't cost you anything, but it gives them a boost, and they could win one of our awards on what has become the highlight, I think, in the business awards calendar. And so get on and vote now if you can, and give those businesses your support. Right. I suppose there is an irony that we're talking about our next topic on what is Love Donegal Day, because some people clearly don't love our beautiful county, or in fact their own beautiful county. Mark joins us on the line now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Greg. Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. You've come across, not just like as if it's bad enough, you know, wrappers and papers and what have you, but big stuff being dumped in some of our most beautiful areas. What have you come across?
That's right, George. I'm working in Down there over the weekend, and I came up through and along the side of the road on the Glen side of Loch Salt, and a bag of beer bottles and cans threw in among them. I was just shocked to see where it was lying. You know, all summer there's been tourists pulling up there, stopping at the top of Loch Salt and taking pictures and everything. And then I just thought, you know, that really shows you what some people don't care about. They just throw it off one of the most scenic spots we have.
Yeah, and someone's bagged up the bottles. I mean, they were so close.
They were set off probably with the bumpers. Because they've been bagged up, and I thought first maybe somebody who cares to collide it, and it was just, you know, left over from that. But when you see the way the bag's set in among them, it's definitely set off, but the whole lot probably in the one go.
Yeah, they were heading over Loch Salt, and they decided that that would be a good spot to dump this stuff. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, Mark? It's so frustrating. It's not your first discovery either.
No, about 3-4 weeks ago, there was a mattress up on top of the bushes there, alongside the law, you know, and I sat there for a couple of days, maybe a week, but I'm not sure what gathered it up. But I've seen where those bumpers are, I've seen stuff dropped off there before, you know, all bits of chairs as well, again, so it was like somebody using it as a dumping spot because they know the council will pick it up.
Yeah, well, you see, that's it. That's it. And it's very isolated. How do we nab these people? I mean, if someone's passed, we need to maybe, you know, that is a busy road. Did anyone see it being dumped? Did they get a number plate?
No, nothing. I was thinking they just turned up there one morning. They were just sitting there. You know, all summer there's been tourists from all over Europe there. So up with camper vans and just parking up their cars and getting out and taking pictures of that. There's a view in front of them, right over the water and the beaches. You know, it's just sad to see it in one of the spots where like you do get a lot of tourism.
Yeah, and it's almost been left there, hasn't it, as if we leave our bins on the side of the road. You know, they've left it there for it to be picked up. Like, that's the crazy part of it.
Something on the same idea, you know, we'll just leave them up there because they won't get collected, you know, so because the council will come and gather them up.
Yeah, all right.
Just somebody using it as a handy dumping spot.
It's absolutely crazy. What do we do, though?
What it is? All we can do is keep a good eye out for it, you know, just keep watching.
I think
someday somebody will come across them. So they will.
All right, Mark, listen, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for helping us to highlight that. And, you know, we can't do anything about it now retrospectively, but what we can do is say, you know what, enough is enough. We need to be the eyes and ears as well, because how else are we going to track all this stuff down? Grania joins us on the show now. Hi, Grania.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Another big item just dumped for someone else to figure out.
Yes, a lovely fridge freezer stunt. I'm just thinking, I was laughing at myself there listening to Mark. Perhaps the cans and the bottles that he found came out of the fridge freezer that we came upon.
Yeah.
Yeah, up in Lisnagra, just outside Muff Village, like a haven of a spot where we all go walking. And now, yesterday was the first time I came upon something big being dumped. I've had numerous photographs sent in to me of other large items, like sofas, chairs, car wheels. Other fridge freezers have been dumped in this area before, but I came upon this myself and my friend were out walking yesterday morning about 9:15, and just on a lay-by on the road adjacent to Lisnagra and Ardmore, just outside Muff, which, unlike the Salt Lake area, it would be a quieter area, especially in the evening and night time. So it's a prime area for someone to come along and just dump something off. But it's really, really starting to aggravate all the residents in Muff, and our entire community, because this area is an area of outstanding natural beauty, I have to say. There's no question about that. But the rubbish dumping is becoming extreme, and really is getting to that stage now that people are starting to get really angry at it.
There's no excuse for any of the dumping.
Well,
you know,
they know it'll be collected.
Yeah, that's it. But the thing is, you talked about couches and wheels and stuff. All they have to do is go to a civic community site. The fridge is free. You can dispose of that responsibly for nothing.
Well, that's what's really annoyed me too, because we live in Muff, and no doubt these people are either in the Muff area or surrounding area. And I think I'm not sure if we're supposed to use the recycling plant over the border in Derry, but it's there, just in the road, a mile in the road. There's a recycling plant where everything is free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so why not leave it in there as opposed to an area like Lisnagra here in Muff? And like I say, only for our local councillor, Terry Crossan, he gets everything lifted. So they're aware of this, that the council will come along and pick it up, and it just shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't. So, do you think that, you know, when we have hotspots of it, and there's people listening all over the region that will have a hotspot in their own area, do you think it's one person that sort of collects rubbish out the back of a van, or do you believe there are, you know, a section of society that they know hotspots to dump? You know what I mean? Like, how, I wouldn't know even where a good place to dump something is, yet people seem to go back to the regular spots over and over again.
And I don't think, and I think I'm speaking in the whole community, it's not one person.
Yeah.
There is a selection of people that just simply, obviously, don't have a conscience, quite frankly, as regards their local area, or appreciate what they've got in the local area. But definitely, not just my own opinion, I do think others will agree that it's not one person. Not the amount of rubbish that has been picked up on the Lisnagra Road. One person couldn't have such an amount, in all fairness.
Yeah.
And I genuinely don't think it's one person.
I think there
it's
is more
a lack of, it's ignorance.
Yeah, I think there's more. It really is. I think they're the same people that will throw rubbish out the window of the car, let their dog poo anywhere, park in a disabled space, because these are characteristics of someone who doesn't care about their fellow members of the community.
Exactly. Yeah, very much so.
You can get.
I don't appreciate the beauty they have.
Yeah, anyone who's got an interest in nature, and you've seen them in the middle aisles of some of the supermarkets, trail cams, you know, cams for watching birds or what have you, they've batteries, mm-hmm. they're remotely triggered. Like, why aren't we doing that? Like, you know the places in your areas, in your area, Grania. I know places where people are regularly dumping. Why aren't we surreptitiously putting cameras in with a view to catching a face or a number plate? And I don't mean us as the population. I'm on about, you know, the environmental section of Donegal County Council, for an example. Like, let's crack down on this. Let's get 15 of these cameras, scatter them around the county, and see who we can catch.
Well, that's the stage. It's got to going to have to be done. Mm. But it's a shame it's come to that extreme that we have to put up cameras to catch people who are illegally dumping. But yeah, that's going to have to be done. I suppose like approaching the councils would be the next stage and trying to get those cameras erected, like in those particular, as you say, hotspots.
Yeah, very, very frustrating.
And that's something I don't really like, but I think it has to be now is name and shame. It has to be done.
Yeah, well, but you see the softly, the educational approach is clearly not working. And what comes next? It's the fines. It's the you know, it's ending up in court in a public arena or something, you know, because we're talking about Love Donegal Day and we do have an amazing county, but some people simply don't care for the county or the people that live in it.
Exactly, yeah. And I think there is an on-the-spot fine, isn't there, for a legal dump of €150? I think I was reading that somewhere lately. So if they're caught, and it's only a small fine as well, it should actually be more.
Yeah, I think so.
But,
because it's...
It is a shame, as you say, on this particular day of all days to have to highlight something, an issue as such, Love Donegal Day.
All right, listen...
teach some people the importance of loving it.
I know. Listen, thank you so very much indeed. My concern is that if they have such disregard for this, what other things in their lives do they have disregard for, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, look after yourself. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for helping us highlight that. A caller says, I think it's outrageous people dump items, big or small, along the main road. I dispose of everything correctly, but it's costing me a lot to dispose of a mattress, for example. It goes by weight. There has to be something done to make it more cost-effective for people. There are two sides to this. Something really has to be done about the lack of recycling without having to fork out a lot of money. I was charged €45 to dispose of a mattress. It's the same everywhere. I get where you're on, where you're coming from with large items, and mattresses are large items. There are days whereby I'm not sure it's free any longer, but certainly you can dump mattresses at a reduced rate. Maybe we need more of that. But, you know, a mattress has to be disposed of one way or other, and it's not for free. So I understand where you're coming from. But the majority of people, whether they're on very low incomes or high incomes, aren't dumping mattresses on the side of the road because it costs €45 to dispose of one. They're finding some alternatives. A caller says there was a community clean-up along Loch Salt last weekend. That material was left beside the old dump house beside Loch Salt. So is it possible you're saying, because it does look organised, that that was left there as part of the clean-up to be collected? Now, that being said, the stuff was also already dumped there, right? So all of those bottles and cans that were collected and put into that blue bag, if that was the case, still were dumped on Loch Salt, if you know what I mean. Those two bumpers, and I thought I recognised one of those bumpers from up the top of the lake that I'd seen previously, the red one. So maybe that was moved for collection, but that still was dumped there. And someone had a caravan or a boat that burnt out and never tied it up after themselves either. So well done to the community for cleaning up that area and congregating that where it's handy to be collected, because I did reference that it did look like it was left there like you might leave out a bin, but it still had to be dumped there in the first place for the great people of the community to gather it up. So it's not a closed case either, so to speak. We're joined on the programme by Caitlin McFadden. Hi, Caitlin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you keeping?
Good.
Right, okay. Talk us through this experience. You and your mum travelling home from Letterkenny. Take up the story from there, Caitlin.
So me and mum was just driving home from Letterkenny, and there was a lady at the top of the road and she was flagging cars down. Now, the woman was very under distress, so mum pulled in and I opened my door, and she was saying that there was two boys drowning in the lake. So just natural instinct, I got out of the car and just ran towards the lake, and I seen two boys, you know, hands up. They were just stuck in the water. So I jumped in and two other boys jumped in right after me. So Matthew himself went and he got the boat. So we swam out, and once we got the two boys, Matthew had the boat beside us within seconds. We got the two boys into the boat and we took them back to land safe and sound, and that's just what happened.
Yep, this is a lake near Creasler, by the way, I should have mentioned. Have you got experience as a swimmer, Caitlin, or why were you so confident to jump in and swim over?
Well, I didn't really have time to think, you know, should I or shouldn't I? I kind of just acted on adrenaline, you know. The only thing that was kind of in your head at that time was to get the two boys out of the lake. But I would be a quite strong swimmer. I was with Doe Swimming Club for a good few years. But I wouldn't have no lifeguard training or nothing like that. You know, just when something like that happens, you just know you need a help.
And do you know Matthew, or he just happened to join the rescue with you?
I didn't know Matthew at all. He just happened to jump in after us, but I was in contact with him after it, you know, and we were kind of speaking about it, but not. It was very good from all of us. You know, we all came out on the better side of it now.
Brilliant. Matthew is with us as well. He works in the Rusty Oven. And Matthew, you do have a life-saving background because you're also a lifeguard, aren't you?
I am indeed, yeah.
And you...
I've never actually performed anything like, but yeah.
Well, your training training kicked in. So you just happened to be there, really, at that time.
I pretty much the same as Caitlin, what she was saying. I was actually on my way from the Glen for a wee toasty, and I was on my way into work, and then the same thing. It was the lady was kind of waving people down, and my dad kind of realised that there was something going on, so I just, the exact same as Caitlin, just hopped out, and I climbed down through, like, bushes and all, because I thought it'd be a quicker way of getting in, and kind of thought it was quicker to get to the boat as well, so yeah.
So you swam to the boat, got into the boat, and then brought the boat to Caitlin and the people that were in difficulty?
Yeah, pretty much, and I'd never actually been in one of them rowboats before, so it was...
steep learning curve.
Trying to figure out what way to go on it. Oh, I had to think quickly there.
Yeah, and what happens, Matthew, in that moment? Because, you know, obviously I think your training kicks in as well, but, you know, to stay calm and to not panic and to be able to think so clearly is impressive. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, well, immediately, like, I knew that obviously the leg was down there, so whenever I saw the lady, like, distressed, I was thinking, you know, worst case scenario, and then I heard her obviously saying that someone was drowning. So I just hopped out straight away and started basically pulling off my clothes, and my mum was nearly sceptical of me going in because there was two of them, and we hadn't seen, like, Caitlin or the other boy down at the, because Ed went down via the boat ramp. So it was kind of looking like, you know, one person going in to rescue two other people is a bit more dangerous, you know. But I don't know, I was confident enough with it all, so I was just kind of shouting instructions at them to kind of keep them calm and let them know I was coming and all.
Yeah.
And then by the time I got into the water, I saw over to my right that Caitlin and the other guy was there. So it was a bit more like, you know, relieving if you've got a few people in the water helping you out, like, so.
It's brilliant. Caitlin, what were the...
I was calm enough.
Yeah, I'll come back to you in a sec. Caitlin, what... I mean, obviously, the mother, like any of us, would be in a panic because, you know, you're starting to fear the worst. You can see people getting into difficulty. What were the condition of the two, you know, when you reached them or you all got them to shore? Were they sort of towards the end of their ability to keep their heads above water, would you say?
The younger fella was. He was kind of bopping his head up and down the water as I was swimming towards him anyway.
Yeah.
So whenever I got to them, you know, it was kind of the wee buck first. But they were struggling come the end, you know, they were kind of losing their breath. But as soon as we came close to them, you know, they kind of did relax because they knew that they were going to be okay. And then with Matthew having the boat was beside us within seconds, you know, everything was all right. And then they kind of calmed down then a wee bit on the boat. You know, but if it was any later, you just wouldn't have knew what happened. But no, thank God it definitely came out the better side of things now.
What was your mother's reaction when she seen you heading for the lake, Caitlin?
Oh, Mammy is in a wee bit of a shock now. She didn't have much to say until I came back.
Yes, okay. Well, listen, fair play to you. It's absolutely amazing, Caitlin. Thanks so much for chatting to us, and well done. It's astonishing what you did, and really, really brilliant. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, Mammy.
All right, bye-bye. Take care. No, it's our pleasure. And Matthew, what was the water like, you know, as someone who'd be more familiar with the water? I know Caitlin was involved with the Dole Swimming Club and all, but we kind of have this tendency to think that inland waters are safer than the sea, but they can pose their own dangers and risks and challenges, Matthew.
Yeah, so, like, I hadn't really thought about it until I got in. I started, like, whenever I was starting to swim, I could taste, obviously, because I'm used to swimming in the sea, like surfing and all. And I could taste, obviously, that it was fresh water. And then immediately I was thinking, oh, sugar. You know, there's less, like...
Less buoyancy, isn't there?
You're less buoyancy, yeah, because there's no salt in the water, which would have been harder for them to swim. So maybe they would have been used to jumping about in the sea, and they were maybe had wetsuits on before, and they were used to kind of floating about, but... In a freshwater lake like that, you know, you're a lot less buoyant. But then on the flip side, if they were drowning in the sea, then they're swallowing salt water, which would cause them to kind of regurgitate a bit more and be a bit more sick, and then probably more chance of like suffocating on the water. So it was literally just, you know, it could have gone either way in either scenario, but it was, I think it was down to seconds really that we were actually all there at the right time, you know. You couldn't really have picked it to come out a better.
No, because you know, you just happened to be, I mean, the fact that you're a lifeguard that happens to be getting a toasty, and the fact that Caitlin's a strong swimmer as well, and the fact that, you know, she was able to get to them, offer reassurance, and you landed then in the boat. I mean, you never want a situation like this to happen, but as things turned out, it couldn't have gone much better in terms of a rescue, and everyone's back on shore and safe. And I'm sure it'll take them a wee while to get over that shock, especially Mum on the sidelines. Like it's a very difficult situation. But listen, Matthew, fair play to you, an absolute hero, as is Caitlin. And there's another local girl was involved in it as well, I believe. I just don't have her name to hand here. But Matthew, listen, thanks so much for joining us, and well done to you. It's brilliant.
Cheers, thanks very much.
All right, bye-bye, Matthew. That's two heroes there, Caitlin McFadden and Matthew there as well. And everyone is safe and sound now. There will be a little bit of an emotional hangover dealing with a stressful situation like that, but remarkable. Two young people as well, not that that matters, but I'll not hear any criticism of our young people. They're absolutely amazing. Right, after 10, we're going to be going somewhere very beautiful in Donegal to get a sense of what it's like in the piddling rain. It's part of Love Donegal Day. This is a big week, by the way, for tourism and our profile. So if you've any lovely pictures out there or any videos, share them on your social media and use the hashtag Love Donegal, because it all matters, and these posts are viewed all around the world, and it just helps to boost the area and boost the economy.